Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
It's a podcast.
What antiques are we talking about this week?
This is a suggestion from a friend of the show, Kat, who asked if we would do an episode on The Blue Boy.
The Blue Boy?
The Blue Boy.
Is it really him at last?
It's finally him at last.
Yay! Tell me all about The Blue Boy.
For those people who are not in the know just yet, The Blue Boy is an old painting. It's a painting from the 1770s of a boy in a blue silk or velvet.
Given the sheet, I would say silk. Yeah.
It's a boy standing very rakishly in this satiny, silky blue costume and looking at the camera as if to say, what of it?
I do really admire the artist's ability to render fabric in oil paints because you can really almost feel the material by looking at it. It's very shiny and very pretty.
It's one of the really, really immediate arresting things about the painting that I think contribute to what makes it a painting that, as Kat had said, everywhere in flea markets and estate sales now.
Not the original painting, the reproductions of said painting.
Well, no, yeah. Sorry to say, we're going to just start right off the top with just saying the only original is in the Huntington Library in San Marino, California. So if anyone tries to sell you an original, they're lying.
Or criminals.
Or a criminal. And then you should check the news to see if it was the one from Huntington Library.
And then you can live the Goldfinch.
Yeah, or you could live the life of someone who's in jail, because then you knew at that point you did it on purpose.
Oh no. Oh no.
Well, you know, I'm just saying. So this painting was painted in 1770 by artist Thomas Gainsborough. He was exceptionally famous for his portraiture, which I think is very funny because he didn't like doing portraits and he only did them for money. He liked landscapes.
What a nerd!
It's just this constant push and pull with artists about, like, they will always love the opposite of what they get paid to do. Because there are definitely artists whose passion was portraits who ended up getting paid to do landscapes all the goddamn time. The boy that is the subject of the painting is kind of a mystery, which some people also think lends to the painting's endless allure. Popularly, people assume that it was a local hardware merchant's punk-ass rich kid. Most people assume this just because...
Look at him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, look at him.
He looks like a little Lord Fauntleroy type, you know?
100% little Lord Fauntleroy.
He looks like a little punk-ass boy.
Yeah, people only assume that because that same punk-ass boy owned the painting for a period of time until he went bankrupt. And, like, I guess there weren't any other reasons that they could think for him to have given the painting to them. I guess they don't think that Mr. Gainsborough had friends.
Well, I mean, you're an artist, you know. We don't have friends.
I try to give people paintings that they would give a shit about, though. Okay, so wait, no, that does make sense now. Anyway, I'm in the other camp. Because the other option is that it's one of his nephews. A nephew which, if you look at other portraits that he painted as an adult, A, looks like exactly the kind of sassy little dandy pictured in the painting, B, he had painted in the exact same outfit afterward.
Oh, well, you know.
Although, this is still a big mystery because the outfit was mostly because Thomas Gainsborough was a huge fan of oil painter Anthony van Dyck.
Whomst?
He was a portraitist who very famously did a bunch of portraits of Charles II as a young boy.
Oh, him.
Him. One of the cool things about the outfit, that shiny blue outfit, is that it was about 140 years old by the time Gainsborough had painted it. That was not a contemporary costume.
Oh, interesting.
It was a costume borrowed from Anthony van Dyck's portraitures from about 140 years before.
What do you know?
Everything in the painting is basically an amalgamation of what he liked about van Dyck's paintings. So no one can be sure, but those portraits of his nephew as an adult, he looks like such an insufferable little rich punk that I have to assume it's the same boy.
That's my boy.
But the funniest thing about why Gainsborough painted this portrait. At the time, Gainsborough was in an intense, the kids call it the frenemy relationship.
Yeah?
He had a bitter rival that he spoke with politely.
Ah.
They were never mean to each other, but they were very much in competition constantly. This was Sir Joshua Reynolds. And shortly before, by shortly I mean, you know, like upwards of a year, given how long oil paintings generally take for masters. Shortly before he debuted The Blue Boy, Joshua Reynolds had written this. It ought, in my opinion, to be indispensably observed that the masses of light in a picture be always of a warm, mellow color, yellow, red, or a yellowish white, and that the blue, the gray, or the green colors be kept almost entirely out of these masses, and be used only to support or set off these warm colors. And for this purpose, a small proportion of cold color will be sufficient. Let this conduct be reversed. Let the light be cold and the surrounding color warm, as we often see in the works of the Roman and Florentine painters, and it will be out of the power of art, even in the hands of Rubens and Titian, to make a picture splendid and harmonious.
Oh, so this is just a flex.
This is a fucking full flex. His rival said, you cannot make most of a painting blue. And he said, the fuck I can't? And relegated all of the warm colors to the background. And anyone who looks at it has to admit that the result is extremely striking in a way that other portraits aren't. And a lot of that has to lend to Gainsborough having a laugh with the color theory. So yeah, my new favorite thing about the Blue Boy is definitely that his entire existence is a clown. He clowned on Joshua Reynolds, and here's the thing. I know about Gainsborough, I don't know about Sir Joshua Reynolds, so guess who won?
Oh, snap.
I was also surprised to find out it is not called The Blue Boy. The painting is not called that.
No?
It's called A Portrait of a Young Gentleman.
Oh.
At some point in 1798, after it debuted in 1770, so a couple 20 or so some odd years later, people just called it The Blue Boy because nobody knew the name of it, because it was a very forgettable name. But it was an extremely popular painting.
Wait, what was the forgettable name?
A Portrait of a Young Gentleman. You've already forgotten it.
I already forgot.
You forgot immediately. This really explains why the Blue Boy took over as the name. But yeah, this painting was a hit right out the gate, pretty much just because of its really interesting approach to color, but also because Gainsborough obviously is a very good portraitist. The pose, the energy, and the expression on the character are all very arresting in a way only good portraiture can do. And it was so popular that after changing hands several times, at one point getting stabbed in the Duke of Windsor's home. So, like,
that was a hell of a party.
There was something, it was like an 11-inch cut in the canvas that someone had sewn up. And it's like, what the fuck happened at the Duke of Windsor's house?
Hell of a party.
Some crazy things happened. It was so popular that there was a basically social riot when the painting went on to be sold to American railway tycoon Henry Edwards. Everyone was pissed. Portrait of a Young Gentleman was considered an immediate British classic.
Oh.
And the idea that they did, that they allowed it to be sold to an American, was so insulting to them. There were, like, petitions to keep it in the country, even after the Duke of Windsor had for some reason stabbed it during a party. It had such an effect on people that right before it was sent off to Mr. Henry Edwards, he allowed it to be displayed in the London National Gallery so that everyone could say goodbye to it. Not making any of this up.
Wow.
And before it went home to Mr. Edwards, Charles Holmes, the curator of the National Gallery at the time, defaced the back of it by signing it with a goodbye and his name because he was going to miss it so badly. The signature is still there to this day.
Wow, they love this little blue boy, huh?
They adore the little blue boy. And although nobody really knows what the actual numbers would be anymore, the auction at which Henry Edwards acquired the painting was pegged at about, and this is 1790 money, $700,000. Adjusted for current money, that's something like 9.3 million American dollars.
Whoop.
I think up until possibly 2 years ago, it was the second most expensive painting in the entire world.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, there have been some extremely huge, like, painting sales in the last 5 years or so. So I don't want to say with confidence, but for a very long time, it kept the second most expensive painting right behind Da Vinci's Madonna and Child.
Holy shit.
Right? It explains why nobody was willing to keep it in Britain, was because I don't think anyone could afford to. Another thing about the Blue Boy is that it is pretty much life-sized. I saw a picture of a curator working on it, and I believe she was only maybe 6 inches taller than the painting.
Oh.
Yeah, it is 70 by 44 inches, so basically life-sized for a young boy.
That's a big boy.
It's a large boy. And our reproductions of the painting were made, figure this, pretty much immediately, within 10 years of the painting's debut. As soon as prints became a viable technology, some of the first prints of art that were made were of the Blue Boy. Peak reproduction point was 1920, where they were churning these things out. The painting managed to maintain the same level of popularity from 1770 to 1920.
Holy shit.
And it actually also just underwent a ton of conservation, which is how they found out that at some point the Duke of Windsor had stabbed the goddamned thing. And not only does it seem to have been painted over an incomplete other portrait in a something of a frenzy, which I like to imagine was Gainsborough on fire to prove that son of a bitch wrong about color, there also was once a dog in the painting.
Secret puppy!
Secret puppy. Yeah, because you know they take x-rays of paintings when they are doing conservation work oftentimes. And underneath layers of paint was a fluffy dog that was mostly finished.
Aw, puppy.
Nobody knows why he painted the dog out. Like, in my humble opinion, it looks good in the general layout of the painting. So no one really knows why the dog got written out. Like, if it was to make the kid look more rich and less pastoral. Curator Shelley Bennett, in charge of the painting itself, suggested that it was because he thought the fluffy dog was at odds with the feathers in the boy's hat. Thus banished the dog from the image.
Huh. Well, that's certainly a thought.
And the Blue Boy legacy doesn't end there. American artist Robert Rauschenberg claimed that seeing the Blue Boy in person was literally his first encounter with art and the first time in his life he realized someone could be a painter.
Oh.
Kehinde Wiley, one of my, please look him up, like, immediately, like, don't even, pause the podcast if you have to and look up Kehinde Wiley, absolutely one of the most stunning painters of all time, instant classic, guaranteed to be one of the greats, cites the Blue Boy as one of his biggest inspirations. He actually took a lot of his early art classes at the Huntington Library. And in 1919, the picture inspired German film producer Friedrich Wilhelm Murnau to create his very first film, The Boy in Blue. And now who's that, you ask? Why, yes, that is the man who made Nosferatu.
Holy shit.
Yeah, he made films because of The Blue Boy. 1919, it was still going this strong after being debuted in 1770.
That's a hell of a boy.
It's a hell of a boy, right? Yeah, I at no point noticed while watching the movie, but yeah, in the most recent Joker movie, the painting is in his apartment.
Just cause?
I think it's a callback to the 1989 Batman. Batman had a copy of the painting in his apartment. The print was still very popular at that point, so I suppose it was just like a nod to his fine art tastes. So yeah, I hope this really helps everyone figure out why you see this thing literally goddamned everywhere. Its popularity cannot be overstated. I was delighted to find out that prints aren't the only thing you can get of the Blue Boy.
No.
There are dish sets, cups, plates, and figurines. There's even a figurine made by Goebel, which you might recognize as the maker of Hummels.
Of course they would.
You know they would. And all of these things are often paired with what is considered the Blue Boy's sister portrait, Pinky, because apparently we're just going to give fine art dumb names now. Pinky is actually a painting of about the same like size that is directly across the room from the Blue Boy of a girl in a flowing pink dress. The painting was done in the late 1890s, I think. They're often paired together when you find collectibles of them, which I think is actually really charming. And actually, the Blue Boy figures are worth a sight more than the prints.
Well, one is easier to reproduce than the other.
Well,
One, you need a laser printer. And any file, probably the largest resolution file you can grab off of Wikipedia. And for the other one, you need a mold.
Yeah. So, I mean, there you go. I was actually impressed with the prices these things were pulling. Even without a fancy name, they kind of range from like $20 to $50, depending on how like pretty they are. This is paired. A singular Blue Boy figurine will stand around $10 to $20, depending on the make and model. Of course, famous makers will inflate that price. And as for the prints themselves, surprisingly a stable cost for, as Ken has correctly pointed out, something that you can run off hundreds of on a laser printer. It tends to depend on the size and the frame. Obviously, most of the reprints are not the original size, although some exist and those are very valuable. Call them standard, I think 9x12 is what I've seen them at the most. Depending on the frame, hovers around the $10 to $50 range. Some of the older ones in particular from the 20s through the 40s tend to be in a really, really nice, ornate, solid wood frame. I guess you could say that the cost is probably for the frame itself, but let's have a little faith in the Blue Boy, yeah?
A little. As a treat.
How much would you pay for a nice print of the Blue Boy?
Now listen, you know I love the Blue Boy, but I don't know that I would pay more than $5 American for an art print.
That's solid. Although, just like with the figurines, if the Blue Boy is paired with Pinky, the sister portrait, the cost can go pretty high up, actually. I saw some desktop metal-framed pairs of them going for around $30.
May I be extremely rude for a moment?
Oh, Ken, I would hate for you to be anything but.
Pinky can go fuck herself.
You don't like Pinky?
That painting is nothing.
You don't like it?
That painting is run-of-the-mill garbage fire. Like, no one cares about Pinky. Why is she even here?
Oh my god. Did you Google her?
Who invited her to this party?
What makes you hate Pinky so much?
She's mediocre. At best, she is mediocre. She is instantly forgettable. The only reason she exists is because everyone assumes something must have a gender binary counterpart in art. And that's bullshit as a concept.
I assumed that the reason it existed was just because it was kind of incredible that someone else had painted at that scale.
No, that was standard for paintings back when painting made money.
Well, yeah, but it impresses people now.
Yeah, but like people only buy reproductions now. Reproductions can be at any scale because they're reproductions.
You know, alright, I'm looking at the painting. I'm gonna give you my immediate take, and Ken's right. It's pretty mediocre.
Like, even if you really want a painting of a girl in pink to match your painting of a boy in blue, there are better paintings out there of girls wearing pink, I swear to God.
Yeah, and better paintings of girls in flimsy Empire-style dresses.
For sure.
Oh, you know, also, they made a lot of paint-by-numbers of these things. And I think that is the only one I would want.
Listen, I would love me a paint-by-number of this.
I actually think the paint-by-number of Pinky might look better than the original painting, hottest of takes.
Probably. Certainly more thought went into it. You have to match up numbers and everything.
But, you know, as much as Ken hates Pinky, she does increase the value.
I don't understand why, but sure.
Apparently there's also a really, really old story that at some point there was this painting hanging in a castle and the boy would come out at night to cry.
Sure. Haunted boy.
Haunted boy. I guess a lot of people got this mixed up an awful lot with the crying boy painting, which I guess now we also have to do an episode on.
Hell yeah. Welcome to our boys series on Antiques Freaks.
This is our series about haunted boys.
There's a couple.
There's actually quite a few haunted boys.
Yes, that is the joke.
Thank you, Ken. Pretty much, that's all I got to say about that. They are actually collectible, which surprised the hell out of me because I did not think that was going to be the case.
But why are they ubiquitous?
Anything that manages to maintain the same level of popularity from 1770 to 1920 is like guaranteed to become ubiquitous, I think. I wish I had an explanation for you beyond it was just really striking to people. There's that old saying that the Mona Lisa was only popular because Da Vinci said it was going to be popular, right?
I thought it was popular because of her enigmatic expression that anyone can project any emotion they want onto.
Well, I mean, that's what people say now, but there is, and I don't know how true this is, I'm pretty sure it's more of a story than anything else, but there is a very popular story that what really made it very popular is that he would walk around with the painting and say this was his finest painting. And eventually, people just adopted the opinion that it was, in fact, his finest painting, with people projecting why it was his finest painting later.
I just really love the idea of Leonardo da Vinci just, like, tucking it under his arm and going down to the market and, you know, ordering some pasta and being like, hey, have you seen this? This is my finest work. Anyway, espresso?
The story works because if you've read anything about da Vinci, that's actually fairly easy to believe. Like, from other behaviors that have been, like, guaranteed that he has done, like, yes. This is all opinion, by the way. I try as I might, I couldn't find one hard, solid reason why it managed to last so long. I think it was the trickle-down of opinion where it debuted with such a splash because of its color. Its use of color is extremely striking. Very hard to find anyone doing anything similar, honestly, throughout, like, the history of portraiture. And then I think just it being so popular because it was the prettiest darn thing at the Royal Academy, and then like snowballing into the amount of outcry when it left Britain, kind of making it notorious. And then the Americans lording it over that they had it now. I think it's like legend just keeps growing over time. Honest to God, like half of it's probably just the extremely high sale price. That makes legends out of any art. You know, everybody knows about this. People who don't give a shit about anything know about, like, the fucking Spider-Man 1 because it sells for, like, roughly $30,000 now, right?
The Spider-Man 1?
Not the movie, the comic.
Oh, you mean the physical comic book, the first issue of the comic book Spider-Man ever printed.
Thank you for clarifying where I forgot to, because Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 1.
Okay. Because the words that were actually said were, you know, the Spider-Man 1. And, oh, those words do convey some meaning. It did leave me floundering for some moments.
Let's be real. It conveyed a meaning that I would have greatly appreciated be true.
I I just want you to go into a Newbery Comics and slam your hand on the counter and demand to know where you can purchase the Spider-Man 1.
Get me pictures of Spider-Man 1. Anyway, that's just a theory. A painting theory. For a very long time, I think up until the 70s, this was the painting people kind of associated with the concept of fine art because it was so visible. It's hard to kind of like see from the outside in because like obviously we have been marinated and basted in art history for such a long time that it is not easy to think of what the like person who doesn't give a shit about art like thinks of art like immediately. But for a really, really long time, this was the painting everyone immediately like, if you wanted to have fancy lad painting in your house, you literally got the fancy blue lad. And now what we're seeing is a lot of people getting rid of these from the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, circulating throughout all of our markets.
Incredible.
Yeah, I think for me now, the mystery is a little bit of the appeal. Why is this what stuck with people for so long? Is the Huntington Library just that good at marketing? I will say pairing it with a sister painting seems to have been a great idea because people really like this. Like you said, gender binary. I read an article that suggested that they were looking across the gallery at each other longingly, and I was like, these kids are like 12, knock off.
And also, they're paintings.
They're also fake paintings.
And deceased by now.
Yeah. Those are dead children. Don't do this. Heteros, I am begging you.
My theory is that it's kitsch masquerading as high art in the reproductions.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think just the very brightness of the color in the boy's blue paired with the satiny sheen of the material would go very well with a lot of mid-century kitsch decor, which would explain its popularity through the 20th and into the 21st centuries. I don't have an explanation prior to that other than, what a splendid boy!
That really does seem to be the crux of it.
In the words of Walt Whitman, he seemed to me like a great big splendid boy.
I think this is the great big splendid boy to end all great big splendid boys, to be honest with you.
Indeed.
The other like thing about prints that make them very malleable is the existence of frames, right? Because that lets it fit in with a lot of decors. You know, if grandma gave you this big great big splendid boy and you want mid-century modern, you can just slap that bad boy in a mid-century modern frame and call it done.
Sure.
I don't know. We're all spitballing here. Why do you like this big splendid boy?
Write in, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com.
Did you learn something new about this big splendid boy?
Write in, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com.
Sources for today include fineartconnoisseur.com, Portrait of the Week, Thomas Gainsborough, The Blue Boy, huntington.org/blueboy, sartle.com, The Blue Boy by Thomas Gainsborough, latimes.com, archives, story 17044, and theartnewspaper.com, Huntington Gainsborough Blue Boy Conservation.
If you would like to give us your opinion on this big splendid boy, you can email antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com or post in our Facebook group Antiques Freaks Friends or tag us on Tumblr antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com.
If you have a searing hot opinion on the number of times we said big splendid boy in this episode and you want to make sure that we know how you feel about that, consider going on down to wherever you're listening to this podcast and leaving us a rating. Even if it's 0 out of 5 stars, I do not like the number of times you said big splendid boy, that's a big help to us and gets our dulcet tones into many ears.
We received a lovely review recently from a lounger.
At the clubs?
At the clubs indeed.
Oh my god, celebrity moment.
This podcast feels like I'm sitting around with my friends talking about antiques. It's relatable and genuinely one of the funniest podcasts out there. I learn something and laugh out loud at least once an episode. Thank you, a lounger.
Thank you so much, A-Lounger. That's so sweet.
If you would like to purchase t-shirts or stickers with the podcast logo on them or a wide variety of vintage goods, may we recommend our Etsy shop at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks. We just had a drop of new items, including several clowns. And if I may, read you the description of one particular clown that D-Ray wrote, extremely sleep-deprived.
Roll that beautiful clown footage.
Helpful porcelain clown jester harlequin doll. Have you been eyeballing some of the book listings here and thought to yourself, I want a clown to hold my books for me. I want a charming little harlequin to keep me company in my car on long drives. How can I own such a fabulous creature? First off, you cannot own this clown. To purchase him is to enter into a mutual covenant with the clown, and I make no promises on what will happen if you approach your relationship with your new clown with a sense of hubris and ownership. Should you choose to respectfully take this clown into your heart and home, he will anything for you that his wire cloth frame can be bent into doing. Now you may notice there may have been a verb missing there, and that is because D wrote, he will anything for you.
I showed you this before. You were like, oh, I'm going to read this on air. And you did not warn me that I had made an extreme typo.
With a purple/watercolor shimmering metallic harlequin outfit, porcelain silver heels, parentheses, are those Chanel? Honey, you know it, close parentheses, and a serene yet dignified painted visage, this clown, cloth-bodied with wired limbs and porcelain head, hands, and feet, is bringing you vintage clown realness. Clown very much included. So if you want to bring that energy into your life, you can go to our Etsy at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks.
Yeah, you could. If you couldn't tell, that was maybe my favorite thing that I listed. I actually have one more clown to put up that I purchased literally the day after the drop.
Hell yes, more clowns.
It is a musical Pierrot-style clown, and when you wind it and play the music, it plays Send in the Clowns.
Perfect. If you would like to listen to deleted scenes or our special bonus episode presentation of the Penny Dreadful Varney the Vampire, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and filling our hearts with love.
So much love.
And thank you in particular for listening.
That's right, you.
Au revoir!